and extending a warm welcome to SCAD S.
Thank you, Tracy. My name is Scott Sumter, I'm an alcoholic. I'm getting up in age, so if I have a senior moment, just go ahead and meditate. I'm liable to have one. I guess my job is to convey to you folks what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. A little bit about me. I was raised on a farm in Indiana. No one on either side of the family drank that I or we associated with. My mother's side's zero. My dad's side, I understand I lost my grandfather to alcoholism. I never met the man. But I'm having a senior moment. My dad was a sharecropper, and we moved around a lot. I went to five different schools from the eighth grade to graduation. And that I had a hard time fitting in. You know what I'm seeing right now? I'm seeing a recording. Tracy asked me if it'd be okay if she taped this, and I got no problem with that, really. But I joined the Army when I was 17 years old, and my father and mother had signed for me because I was too young, but I wanted to get away from home. I guess what I need to get into what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. When this happens, You think about it and it gets worse. The anxiety and fear that comes with getting up here and trying to say something. But the first time I drank, I got drunk, and I was home on leave from the Army. A couple of buddies, and we got a bottle of Seagram 7. And I drank more than my fair share that night. And I'm like Steve, if my buddies hadn't taken care of me and got the trash can there, I couldn't even walk to get in to get up on the couch. And they took care of me, and I didn't drown that night. I could have. But I'm grateful that, I made it. I was telling Steve before the meeting, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. But I got married right after I got out of the Army. I got married to the same woman I'm married to now. I definitely definitely married above my pay grade. In a couple of weeks, I will have been married to her for 57 years.
Congratulations.
And she is a gem, but we got married and had a son, and he was diagnosed with bipolar in his 20s. But when he went, first started going to kindergarten, they come back to us and said, your son is retarded, he needs to be in a special school. And I said, he's not retarded. You know, he just doesn't listen. He just doesn't listen. But he was a source of a lot of my drinking. And I rode to work with a couple of retired chiefs. We carpooled. And every night, evening, when we get off work, we go to the Quick Stop and get a six pack. And I was drinking almost every day in my 20s. And I loved to party. And alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. It was, I would go to the club sometimes. A lot of times I wouldn't go with carpool because I'd go to the club after work. And I'd be in there maybe an hour or so, and I'd call the wife and I'd say, I'll be home in about 30 minutes, hour, whatever. Next thing I know, I'm closing this place up. So it got to where I wouldn't call her at all, you know. I mean, I knew that if I went to the club, I was going to close it. And that's the way I drank from the beginning. You know, I think I was an alcoholic from the very beginning. I just couldn't get enough. I drank for the effects produced by alcohol. This anxiety is really tough tonight. You're a tough crowd. but we moved to Suffolk in 1986. We built a house on Lake Prince, and it's a log house. It's not a log cabin. This was a 28 square foot, 2,800 square foot house with a two-car garage. Our old house, I had fixed it all up exactly like I like it, you know. Had a swimming pool, that I had put in, built, closed the carport in, had a fireplace in there. Wrapped the whole house up with aluminum siding, built a double carport out in front of the original carport. And it's a really nice house now. And this woman wants to move. She wants to move. Well, I say, okay, She wants to build a new house. Get a construction loan and build a house. We don't have a lot. We don't have nothing, you know. But what do? I jump out there and put the place up for sale, you know. I'll show her. And, this log house is not like a stick house. Everything costs a lot more money. And it's very difficult to get people to work on it because everybody's scared of it. It's logs. Well, I did it for spite. I said, if you want a new house from scratch, it's got to be a log house. Well, that log house ended up almost killing me. Because I was up there inspecting what these guys were doing. And by the way, you know, it took me three contractors to get this house built. I finally got some hunters that could build this thing, you know. I was up there looking at what they had been doing, and I fell through these 4x6 beams. And I come down and it was falling all around me. And one of them got me in the pelvis and broke my pelvis. But this house I'm trying to build, you know, I can't throw enough money at it. And after I broke my pelvis, you know, you can't put a cast on your ass, you know. It's tough. And when I was in the hospital, the doctor said, when you can get out of bed and get to the bathroom and back to the bed, you can go home. I was in there for 10 days. And I finally managed to do that, and I got out. And, but I can't ride in the car, I can't sleep on the bed, I've got to sleep in a recliner. Because basically this thing's given a little bit, you know. But I finally got over it, but it was a chore. And I drove my wife crazy running up there to see if it was, you know, see if they were working. And God help you when you have a contractor that's a deer hunter, you know. Because when deer season opens, everything comes to a grinding halt. And I had to pressure wash every inch of that place. Because it was, I don't know how many of you know what raw wood does, but raw wood, and that's what this kit was that I bought. It turns black and stuff starts growing on it rather quickly. Mud divers love it. And big woody woodpeckers love it even more. Because they are going after these carpenter bees, which I ignored from day one. And I thought, you can't eat 44 tons of log kit up. Well, that was a mistake. I needed to get rid of them as soon as they appeared, but I didn't. So, you know, I'm not real happy with this log house. And I did a lot of drinking during that time, and it was very, very stressful trying to build a house 45 miles from where I live. I was trying to rent a place in Sand Bridge put all of my furniture in storage while I'm trying to build this house. And I don't know if you know it or not, but the price of beachfront property is fine in the winter. But come spring, they want an arm and a leg. So I didn't have the money. So I ended up taking the family and moving in with my wife's cousin. Well, I always wanted to look good, you know? And this is not looking good when you know, my pride smarted big time. Here I am, you know, I can't even put a roof over my family's head. You know, my pride is way out there. But I'm grateful that they took us in, her cousin. And, you know, I was grateful that we had a place to live, because this whole thing gave me all kinds of heartburn. And very stressful. But you're supposed to be meditating while I figure out where I'm at here. But during this time, my son, it was crazy. He had gotten married and divorced and is back home. And like I said, he was diagnosed with bipolar, but he had this car that he'd taken the fenders all apart. And had I think a 2x8 or a 2x12 for a bumper. This car was a very embarrassing thing to me. And, you know, I had to drink, you know. I drank over this stuff. I always wanted to look good. I was in Kiwanis, and I had a management job. I was a leader of men, pillar of the community, you know. But really and truly, I was very, very scared of the future. And I had a temper, and I was very, very angry about everything. You know, my son being bipolar, my friends, their kids were going to college. Mine wasn't capable of doing that. And he was just an embarrassment to me at the time. And I drank a lot. I drank a lot on the road. This was when 64 was just two lanes going both ways. And here I am having to ride all the way to Suffolk from Norfolk, because I worked at the Naval Aviation Depot in Norfolk. But I had, you know, every evening, even after we moved into the log house, I was still drinking. And I remember I would get up, drag myself out of bed, and go to work, and I'd say, I'm not going to do it today. I don't have to do this. And by 10 o'clock, that's all I could think about. And I would always have an excuse for drinking, regardless, you know, and I would succumb. I would stop at this quick stop on the base, and I'd be off to the races. But you have to remember, this was before, there was a lot of traffic that wasn't moving. And I was fat, dumb, and happy, you know. I had my 12-pack. I didn't care. And that's what it did for me. It did for me what I could not do for myself. Control my emotions. And, you know, I found myself in a psychiatrist's office. My son, I wanted to kick him out, you know, and she wouldn't let me. And we were in some big argument, and she said to me, "Do you think it's normal that your veins on your neck stick out like that?" And she said, "You need to go to counseling. You know, that's just not normal." Well, I knew she was right, but, you know, I thought, okay, I'll go get her off my back. And I went to this counselor. I don't know how he knew it, but I certainly didn't tell him, and I didn't go to any sessions actually drinking. But somehow or another, he knew I had a problem with alcohol. But he did give me some help with my son, don't get me wrong. A little bit. But for the most part, I wasn't on board, you know. And I think I went to him about six times, and he suggested I go to AA. And he had a workbook, and 12 and 12, and the big book, and he'd give them all to me. And I leafed through it, and I thought, I didn't understand much about it. I remember I had this workbook, and I was going down, and it, you know, it says, "Do you drink alone, da 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 da," and so forth. And I said, "This is crap." And, but I did go to a couple AA meetings at Maryview. The first meeting I went to, I can't remember if I drank any before I got there or not. Probably did. But, you know, a lot of the meetings are open discussion. I asked for a topic. So I filed that away, and the next Wednesday when I went to Maryview to this meeting, the chair asked for a topic. I put my hand up. And I said, what do you people do while everybody else is drinking and having fun? What do you do? And they thought that was a good topic. But they didn't tell me what they did. I said, this is a crock. I'm not an alcoholic. And I went out, I continued to drink for 3 more years until I got in trouble. And when I got in trouble, I got 2 DUIs 28 days apart. And I could never, you know, look at anything honestly. The first DUI I got was because I was speeding. It was not because I was drinking. I actually thought at the time that I could pass the field sobriety test. I actually thought that. But it turns out I was drunk, according to the state of Virginia. Not according to me. I continued to drink. And the second DUI I got, I was getting ready to go on, I was on the on-ramp, getting from Military Highway, going up to on 64. Somehow or another, I just went right straight in the ditch. And I thought, well, no problem. I got a six-pack. I'll just jump out and get away from this truck. And needless to say, I passed out again before I even got out of the truck. And that time, I had to really wrestle with the reason why I passed out. I knew it, you know, I had never had that happen before. So I remember the cop kicking the rocks off of the, you know, the line that he was getting ready to have me walk. And I come up with bald tires and loose gravel. That's what caused me to get in the ditch. Well, I knew that was a crock. But that's the way my mind worked at the time, you know. I could self-justify my behavior until the cows came home. Always had an answer. But naturally, I had to go to ASAP, alcohol, and I don't even know what it stands for. Alcohol and drug schooling. And any people meditating?
No.
Everybody should be real relaxed by now and just about ready to go to sleep. But I'm trying to tell you, really, is, you know, I'm a whiner. I was a whiner. I remember going to the doctor, and by then I was very claustrophobic, and I had an ulcer, and he put me on Zoloft for my depression. And he also told me as I was leaving the office that people who abuse alcohol, the blood cells are not round, they're oval. And he said to me, you really ought to see what you can do about your drinking. And boy, that ticked me off. I thought, what a turkey. And I didn't go back to that doctor. But honesty, I didn't even know what that was when I was drinking. But in 95, where I work went on the base realignment closure list. And man, that was another source of real despair for me. I'm losing my job now, you know. This is probably one of the most important things that in my life was my work. And I was really ticked off at the upper management because, you know, I had been passed over for promotion probably at least 3 or 4 times. And I was bitter, full of self-pity, really ticked. And, you know, it says in the book, a lot of us were burned up. I knew exactly what that meant. I drank, and I drank hard. That's one of the things that really put me over the edge. I just couldn't accept it. Wasn't in my plan to retire. And I thought I was just going to lose my job and I'd have to go find another one. But none of that happened. I got to retire early because I was in a particular window with my employment, and I got to retire. So it all worked out. But I mean, I had, you know, I run it all out there and made a big deal out of it and just blew it all out of proportion. And yeah, I guess it was that was in 93. I've never had this much trouble before. So I'm having a very, very difficult time. I think my age is really catching up on me. But I went on a work-related trip down to Jacksonville Florida right before the base closed. And I had been to a couple of meetings. Several meetings of AA. I think I've been sober maybe 2 months, maybe. And I went down to Jacksonville, Florida on this business trip. And being away from home, I thought no one would know the difference. And I still hadn't really accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. And I got drunk, good and drunk. I tried to really catch up. And I got deathly sick coming back from this meeting that I had with the captain of the NADEP down there. I made the meeting, and on the way back to the hotel, I got deathly sick. And it just wouldn't stop. You know, I had the dry heave so bad. Hungover like you wouldn't believe. And I said, I cannot continue to live like this. And I might have said, God, I cannot continue to live like this. I don't think I did. But there wasn't anybody else around. So who was I talking to? I surrendered 110%. I had had it. I was finished. I made up my mind. I was going to join AA. I was going to get a sponsor. And I was going to start. I was going to go to any lengths, just like you said. Do it. I couldn't imagine life with or without alcohol, but I knew that I had to quit drinking or it was going to kill me. So I came back to Suffolk and picked up a white chip and asked this guy to be my sponsor, who I had seen much earlier, at Miss Bunny's. And at the time, I was trying to convince him that I wasn't an alcoholic. I was whining. You know, that he said, well, maybe you're not an alcoholic. I thought, oh, that's good. I said, yeah. He says, see if you can do some controlled drinking. Do it more than once. So see if you can drink one or two and quit. Well, I thought, okay, that's fair enough. And I thought, it shouldn't be any problem. However, it took several attempts to actually do this, because every time I was determined I was going to do it, I would figure out some excuse that, hey, this is not a good day to do this experiment. I had never in my life experienced the phenomenon of craving. Never, ever. Because I always had enough. I had this refrigerator in my garage. Always kept it full. But that was a monkey on my back when I finally did it. And I actually did. I drank a couple beers and I, you know, the craving, I had never experienced it. And so I managed to get honest enough and humble enough to ask this guy to be my sponsor. And he was a little younger than me, not a whole lot, but a little younger. He had 15 months of sobriety. And he was tough. Very tough. And I was so hard-headed, I would read the big book, and I'd get a little bit out of it, but somehow or another, the big book new passages appear in that thing. it's weird. But I didn't take to this thing like a duck to water. You know, I still had that defiance. And I don't know. I just didn't get it. I don't know. I think I thought I knew best, you know. But when I surrendered in Jacksonville, that changed. I started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it says in the literature that live on a spiritual basis, die an alcoholic death. And I try to do that, but I, if I had to give myself a grade, it'd be something like a D, maybe D minus. But guess what? That's passing. It's passing. I haven't had a drink in a long time. My sobriety date's November the 7th, 1994. But I did the first step perfect, I believe. But the rest of the steps, not so much. But in the beginning, I was so fearful I would drink again that I honestly, honestly found something bigger than me. And I believe that something is God. God could and would if he were sought. And the fact that this is life and death, I didn't want to die. But if alcohol still worked for me, I don't think I'd be standing here. I'd be dead, for one thing. But I would still be drinking. If I was still alive, I'd be drinking. That's how addicted I was. And my personality and of always wanting to look good and my pride is just out there. But I got one little story I'll tell you, and then I'll shut up. I guess I'd been in AA maybe about 4 months or more. And I had a heart bypass. Came very close to dying. I was in the hospital for 10 days with an operation that at that time was taking about 4 days. They couldn't get my heart regulated. And my sponsor came to see me twice. Came to see me twice. The first time he came, you know, we had a nice visit. And the second time he came, was a little different. I don't know, but it's been a long, long time since he came to see me. But I was whining, complaining about the food, complaining about the nurses. I'm laying there with tubes coming in and out of me. I still had the drain tube in, I believe. But I was consumed with self-pity, very scared, because I actually thought that I might die. And my sponsor, on the way out, he handed me a pacifier. You see, that's how hard-headed I was. I didn't feel connected at all during that time. I was so scared, and I didn't have the faith that I have today. But that shook me to the core. You know, I thought, what a SOB, you know? But if he had just told me, it would have went right over my head. But I'm very grateful that, you know, I picked him. I think that he was put in the right place for me to ask him, and all of that played out like it was supposed to. And I am grateful. But I try to work this program in my life, and I understand that the problem's me. It's not alcohol, it's me. When I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. And I need to find out what that is and ask God to help me. And, you know, I read the 24-hour book, 24-hour, I think, 24 hours a day book. And I still haven't made the connection that I'd like to make with this power greater than myself. But I know it keeps me sober, and you people keep me sober. I know that if I go to an AA meeting, I'm going to to pray twice. You know? And life is good today. I'm relatively happy. I think the promises have basically come true for me. And I'm grateful. And, you know, I've had a lot of jobs in AA. I've been on the steering committee for the intergroup. I've been on committee chairs and GSR and a lot of jobs. I really try to be not just around AA, but actual member of AA. And all of that helps to change my thinking, because that's where I'm screwed up. I have the disease of alcoholism, and I am powerless over alcohol. And I guess I'll quit about there, so I love you all.